Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to This Week in Mormons for this wonderful week, middle of June. We come to you live from Salt Lake City.
Well, it's not live. We're recorded still.
We were supposed to tell people that it was a live show.
But we're passionate.
Someone told us that. Remember?
Yeah, I know. Well, we were going to do that.
You know.
It's good.
It's going to be good. So, gosh, we're so predictable. It's pathetic. Anyway, thanks for tuning in, everybody. It's lovely to have you here with us. We have returned from our amazing adventure.
We're back. Hello again.
And it was lovely. Wonderful.
Yeah, it was a pretty incredible adventure.
Please don't eat while we're trying to record.
Jeff, these are dried cranberries from our road trip. I feel like I'm reliving the road
trip. Oh, is that
what
this is?
Okay. As I eat these.
Yeah, it's putting you in a place to reminisce.
Hold on, let me drink some Yoo-hoo too.
Where did we buy those cranberries, if you remember?
I actually want some Yoo-hoo. Can we take a commercial break so I can get some Yoo-hoo?
You can do that and I'll vamp.
Okay.
Hurry up, though. So I was just going to get some Yoo-hoo. We had a marvelous trip. Let me tell you, everybody. Oh, the things we saw. South Dakota, underrated. Montana, overrated.
Wyoming, it's about right.
I feel like Wyoming is actually underrated as well.
Wyoming underrated?
Well, a lot of Wyoming sucks, but the part we went through was stunning, I think, to say the least, wasn't it?
Yeah, the northeast corner. We went and hit...
That was pretty nice.
little Yoo-hoo. So our trip was...
There's 180 calories. Wow, there's more calories than that than a can of soda.
No, listen, this is the way I judge all my caloric intake.
Go figure.
One thing of chocolate milk is like 400 calories for a little liter of chocolate milk.
Yeah, so here are the things I've learned about Al. I've known Al for years, and yet spending this much steady time together, I've learned that Al... I always knew he liked chocolate milk, but he loves chocolate milk.
I do. I'm a connoisseur.
But more than this, Al loves either ice cream or shakes. And I swear almost every night that we've been together for the past over 2 weeks now, the man has to have some form of a shake or of
it's my
sundae.
It's my cool down food. That's not unhealthy.
Every single day, people.
Well, see, I'm trying to drive myself to lactose intolerance. And once I get there, I'll understand all the people that have been prejudiced against.
Is this like a mission that you want to start drinking like silk milk, but you just need to force yourself to do it?
I need to get bloated and gassy more consistently so that I can make the shift over to silk milk.
I think that makes sense, actually.
Yeah, thank you.
Sometimes we need to do drastic things.
But I agree with you. I agree with you. The South Dakota, amazing. Incredible.
Yeah.
A couple of highlights.
Please.
We saw Mount Rushmore twice. That was great.
You're not going to live that down that I made you go back the next day.
We went at night and Jeff was convinced we needed to see it during the day.
The best pictures you got of yourself at it.
It's true.
During the day. In your Hawaiian shirt.
That is true.
So,
that was a great one.
Come on.
Other highlights. Sleeping in a teepee that was not yet available.
Let's walk people through this real quick.
Okay.
So we're up in Waterton Lakes National Park, which borders Glacier National Park, but it's in Alberta. We went to Canada. And... we just rolled into a campsite somewhere up in a mountain pass, something like that. And at first, we were just going to sleep under the stars. And we heard they had these teepees, but they told us they were full already, booked up, this very tourist trappy thing with teepees that were all furnished, sort of, well, with like roll mats and like heaters
we were
and stuff.
We were excited.
And so we decided to leave and go into town because we weren't sure if we were going to, it was pretty cold, so we didn't know if we were going to be able just to sleep under the stars or not. But then as we're driving, we see teepees. So we pulled over, checked out the teepees. There was just nothing in them, just dirt.
No. You're missing a part of the story. We were planning on sleeping out under the stars.
Sort of, but I think we were on the fence.
Mainly because I forgot the tent. That was my fault, admittedly.
But we learned a tent would have made no difference in this weather.
And so it was slightly raining, and then it got down to be really, really cold.
It got cold, so I think we were going to go into town and see if there were like motels.
We were going to venture around.
Because not all of us had the best equipment.
It was like 10:30 already.
Which up in Alberta means it's still light.
Yeah, it's practically Alaska that way.
So we find the teepees. We decide, the teepee will protect us from the cold Albertan wind.
We believed in it. And so we settled into the teepee.
It was like permafrost.
But we didn't have a tarp or anything. So like pillow on the dirt, sleeping bag on the dirt. We were ill-prepared.
I honestly thought the whole night I was the only person who was miserable and having trouble sleeping.
Turns out Jeff was the only one in a mummy bag.
And I had the best gear. I was zipped all up in a mummy bag, just happy as could
be. It was me and one other guy. I was in a mummy bag that went up midway up my chest because I'm enormous, and that was the only bag that I had in the back of my car. And our other guy had a sleeping bag from Walmart rated down to like 50 degrees or something.
Yeah.
And no sweater. He was wearing a sweater vest. Jeff and I had hoodies. Our ears were protected. Poor Brock. just
so it was a sweater vest. It was a very special night. We woke up at about 5:30, freezing cold, like trying to roll up my sleeping bag outside the tent just to get in the car was one of the most painful experiences I've endured in a very long time. It was
and if
just
we weren't
like,
all huge men, it would have we probably would have just migrated to the car, but there was no more satisfaction we had sleeping in that Camry than
no. So we spent the whole night shivering, waiting for bears to come and like poke their paws underneath the gaps in the teepee, and I kept looking down at my feet hoping they weren't anywhere close to the gaps in the
teepee. I've never seen so many bear warning signs as in Waterton Park, Alberta. No, but so that was definitely a highlight.
But it was a blast. I mean, we got up kind of cracking up about
What a great story.
And it got us up early enough to enjoy Glacier at its finest, so we were able to drive all the way to Rexburg in one day and see Glacier.
When you're sleeping like that, it's easy to get up at 5:30.
When you start your day at 5:30, you're golden. So Calgary is very nice. Thank you to our Calgarian listeners.
Thank you, yes. Calgary was all right. It's kind of like a sleepy big town. Nothing special.
You equated
it
to Boston.
Yeah, well,
a sleepy big town with nothing special about it.
No. Well, like, so this is my rationale here. Calgary, like, there's not things to. New York is like things going on. They have activities going on. Things are being planned, and
yes,
people
Calgary,
are going out and doing stuff every night.
Calgary is not New York City.
Calgary.
I know this may blow your mind, but they're
Calgary.
Not.
There were. No, nothing going on really. Even the downtown, it was just like a working downtown, kind of like Kansas City.
A lot, but most North American cities are working downtowns, though.
Well,
I mean, shouldn't
be.
I mean, well, look at Kansas City. What is it, the Power and Light District or whatever? I mean, they're trying to gussy stuff up, but for the most part, most downtowns are pretty dull.
But Calgary is like that's one of the huge Canadian metropolitan areas. I expected more.
I think it's maybe number four. It might be.
Out of six, yeah.
Yeah, all pretty right, much, yeah. And we got like Toronto, then Montreal, then Vancouver, then probably Calgary, and then what? Edmonton?
Really? How big is Calgary?
I think it's maybe 2 million in the area.
Yeah, that's solid.
It felt a lot bigger than I think it was. It felt like it took forever to drive through all of it. Could spread out like Kansas City.
Anywho.
Anyway, that was great. And how about that Cardston Temple, though, huh?
Oh, my gosh. Cardston Temple was a great find.
A great find. It was this gem that nobody knew about, and we discovered it.
I never thought to go to the Cardston Temple. Why would I even care to go to the Cardston Temple?
And now you know.
Then we found the Liahona up on top instead of the Angel Moroni.
Yeah, apparently they blast a light from the top like the Luxor in Vegas.
Pretty exciting stuff.
Which we didn't get to see, but the temple itself was crazy architecture.
Very
inside.
Very Old Testament feeling.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, it might be one of my favorite temples. I mean, I've been to like some great ones. Nauvoo is awesome. San Diego's great. You know, there's some great temples out there.
There are some.
But why randomly up in Cardston, Alberta, do they need a great temple? I don't know.
Because way back in the day, they sent saints, just like they sent them south into Mexico. They
no,
sent
I understand them why there's
Canada,
Mormons there.
And they're just across the border. And so
but
they
let's
were,
go down to Mexico and look at all the amazing temples
this is
down
true.
There.
They did not get a temple in Colonia Juarez.
They got the shaft.
Well, Mexico gets the shaft.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, I would look at Cardston and think maybe Mesa. Yeah, you could have a Mesa type temple. Just a meh. Yeah.
Well, it was built during that same era as Mesa and La Jolla. So.
But it's so much better.
It is cool.
So much better.
Mesa could maybe once they dedicate the Gilbert Temple, Mesa could get renovated and go back to its former glory. Because right now it's awkward inside. You move around weird to random rooms, and you know it's kind of how La Jolla was trying to like eke out a modern experience in a layout that just doesn't permit it really, so you have to start over. So Cardston was cool, and Al was going to marry a young man's daughter or an old man's daughter.
It's true.
At this visitor center thing, we talked this guy up.
Listen,
this guy,
I have a
this
rule.
Guy was offering us
always
to sleep in his house.
Always be closing, Jeff. Always be closing.
Yeah.
And so,
all right.
I was just shopping around. He was like, hey, I got a daughter. She's 30. Didn't work out, though. Tough break.
And if we want to know the truth, because we found her on Facebook. And
I'm pretty sure Facebook is a killer of more blind dates than anything else to be invented in the last 20 years. The fact
Thank
that
you,
I can just
Cardston
look,
Municipal Wi-Fi. We appreciate it.
Just look up a picture of a woman. That's ruined so many blind dates.
So anyways, other surprises. We met Gollum on this journey. And that was exciting. So if any of you have wondered where Gollum from Lord of the Rings
she's in Billings.
Has been hiding, she's living in Billings, Montana.
She runs the
river, the Red River Inn, Red Rock Inn.
Terrible.
Outside of downtown.
Just an awful, awful person.
Well, Billings is an awful, awful city.
Yeah, that was when we were there, they had a Playboy convention, a Maxim
and a Jehovah's Witness convention.
And a Jehovah's Witness.
So to walk you through our
convention.
Mindset, we figured Billings, it is the biggest area in Montana, but we did not figure, you know, we figured Billings would be like a a $35.99 Motel 6, you know, a night kind of town, right? We're not going to be charging. Everyone there was trying to charge us $90, $100 for these Econo Lodges.
You can't plan for this stuff.
I know. How are we to know? So we drove all over Billings, but it was just delightful. But Gollum was this freaky woman who ran this motel, and I wish we could have gotten pictures. Especially when she started being mean to us because she saw Brock in the car.
Our fault. We should have hidden Brock better. Anyway.
I know. Anyway, so.
Great trip.
It's been marvelous. And being in Salt Lake has been terrific. We've sat around a lot and watched Bourne movies.
Well, you kind of need to. It's a recovery time.
I'm already over the sitting around now. It's time to go.
Okay. Off you go then.
Off I go. Chip, chip. Goodbye.
Let's see.
So, have any other Mormon relevant things happened to us on our journey?
No. Not that I can think of. I mean,
we went to church in Rexburg, and that was delightful.
Oh, thank you to the Schlegel Milks. You were quite lovely.
The Schlegel Milks taking us in. They were actually very lovely. Yeah, what a nice family.
An amazing breakfast. The mom's spinning out eggs. We were having
fresh milk, farm fresh eggs, real sugar and salt, like not processed.
I think probably the best part of the trip was Glacier. If anybody ever has a chance to go to Glacier, go do it. It was one of those places where, like, as we're driving along, you like the car feels like it just stops itself and your hands fall to your side and you gasp and your jaws is slack and you get out and you just fall to the ground and weep, rent your clothes and call for ashes and say, this is my whole life has been but a prelude to this moment.
I agree. It's crazy.
Yeah. Good times.
Glacier was great. And and we learned it's okay to call people idiots and say crap from the pulpit.
Dude, that sacrament meeting was so messed up.
I felt like this guy had
a great showman.
This young couple spoke, like 19-year-old girl, and the guy's like 24.
It's always
he had good points. I understood what he was trying to say, but his vehicle of delivery
can we pause for a moment here? Do we disagree with the getting married at 19 thing? Should that be discouraged in the church?
Well, I don't know. I mean,
I feel
this goes back to things. How much of that should be the church because we need to get married, and how much of that is really just like 19th century American cultural stuff because it was the norm?
Or how much really is young, it is you just know? Young kids knowing that the only avenue to sex is marriage, and so that's why they do it?
Well, that could be, but I think they genuinely love
each other. Let's be honest. I think horniness is something that is a huge tool of getting people married. If it wasn't there, we could just be buddies forever, right? Like,
now, but Al, by that logic, you would assume the marriage rates would increase the older we get because the hormonal drive of things gets worse as we get older.
You think so?
Well, for men, for men, not as much. Right. I feel like it's so. Like, look, people, not to be too crude here, but I'm 30 years old. And it's one thing when you're in your early 20s and you're like, oh, yeah, I look forward to those things when I'm married and blah, blah, blah. Once you hit this age, you're like, okay, right now I'm physiologically past a point where my body is not supposed to be not experiencing these things.
But at 20 years old, that's all you think about.
Yes.
That
doesn't change at 30.
No. Well,
so, you know, I mean, we're still men.
Give or take. Anyway.
But thank you for taking this place out.
Well, because I'm sitting there watching this poor girl, like she left her home. Was gone for a year, met this guy like 2 months away from home, and then ends up being married 6 months later.
Good for them.
And I'm like,
whatever.
Well,
you're more worried about the girl. I'm more worried about the guy who's probably going to be a serial killer at some point.
Yeah, he may be trouble.
I'm not worried about the girl. She seems great.
I don't know.
The guy was a champ.
The guy was terrible.
Terrible.
And I quote, favorite quote from the talk, Jeff?
Please.
Let's see. How did it go? I served a great mission, and anybody that ever tells me otherwise, well, if you're a child or a woman, you're safe. But if you're a guy, I might deck you.
Yeah. What did he say? He said there were two things
that
he believed that were sure. One was my wife is the most important thing in my life. Second, I was the best missionary I was able to be. And if you tell me otherwise, everything else.
I'll beat you. So.
So we were very tempted to walk up to him afterwards and just say like,
crummy mission, boy. We'll just see if he'd hit us.
You drank coffee while you were out there, didn't you?
I heard that you got up at 6:45, sucker.
Oh, because 6:30 is the norm.
For right. Some people.
Yeah. Anyway. I got up at 7.
It's neither here nor there.
Anyways, good
we
times.
We have a lot to talk about.
There are many, many things in the news this week. Goodness, where do we? Should we start with fluffy things or with heavy things? So many.
Let's go with fluff. You got any Glenn Beck out there? Let's do that.
Okay, Glenn Beck is the love prophet.
Oh, go on.
Now, this is not to be confused with the Mike Myers film, The Love Guru. No, no. This is the love prophet. Glenn Beck.
Or with Thomas S. Monson.
Okay, here's the thing that
prophet.
Al and I didn't even realize. Glenn Beck still has a nationally syndicated radio show.
I thought he was behind the paywall, the GBTV paywall.
I think that was more for his television stuff, because he still always had the radio show even when he was on HLN and Fox News.
Okay.
So he still has that, and he just renewed for a $100 million radio contract. But now apparently
Glenn, that is unreal to me.
And they say there's no money in radio.
There is an extremism.
There is an extremism. There's great money in extremism and syndication, so whatever.
What do they say? He's right behind Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity?
Yep, so he's number two. So Glenn Beck is actually trying to rebrand himself a little bit. They published McKay Coppins, our own McKay Coppins, published something called Glenn Beck's New Brand, Prophet of Love. And basically, Glenn Beck is trying, I guess, to get away from the anger and the crazy.
That doesn't seem like him.
Well, he does cry a lot, so I guess it'll just be more crying.
Glenn Beck is a visionary, and you're a jerk, Jeff.
I know. So it's going to, like it says right here, the venue is set to introduce, well, this is going to be in Dallas, sorry. He's going to have this thing called the Restoring Love 3-Day Festival, and it's going to reintroduce the world to the kinder, gentler Beck at this 3-day event. It'll be a global tea party summit.
How do you have a 3-day event to reintroduce yourself? Are you just up there and you're like, go ahead, try and get on the phone and make senseless comments, and I won't yell at you. Go ahead. Let's do this for 3 days, and you will see that I have restored love.
Look, I'm going to say, oh, Busby did make a pretty good picture of it, though, if you click on the link.
$100 million. That is nuts.
Well, so, yeah, but I guess it makes sense. Maybe the gospel is, like anybody else, Glenn Beck is softening. There's nothing wrong with that, if he is.
Yeah.
So, everyone, if you're in Dallas from July 26th through 28th, and right-wing fanaticism is your thing,
get ready for some hashtags.
I need to be less politically loaded with the things I say.
Yeah, no poop,
say,
Sherlock.
Look, if you're of a stronger conservative,
well, he's mixing it with a global Tea Party summit. I mean,
if you are a Tea Party, if you're a patriot who believes in freedom and a lack of government intrusion
Jeff,
into
why,
your life,
Jeff, why are you such a cynic?
I'm not a cynic.
That's not what I heard.
I've been rallying against the Tea Party since 2009, but whatever. Hey, that's fine. So
I rally for them. Go Tea Party.
No, don't. You hate them just as much.
Go
as you.
Tea Party.
So anyways, I look forward to seeing what the softer Glenn Beck is, and I guess maybe I need to pay more attention to his radio broadcasts, because without him on TV, he doesn't rise to the very base level of news that Al and I follow.
Right.
Yeah, so.
Right, where it shows up in our...
He has to come up above the surface for us to see anything. Don't expect us to dig down anywhere and find anything legitimate. So,
kind of an interesting op-ed in the New York Times by David Mason. Good old D. Mace.
That's a suspect name.
Yeah. No, it's pretty good. He says, I'm Mormon, not a Christian. That's the headline.
Well, that's good. That's what we're aiming for.
Yep.
That's fine. It's a big part of the church's PR machine. Call Michael Otterson. He'll be thrilled.
Finally, somebody saying the message that we all want to say. So essentially this is op-ed where he goes through and says, listen, like, you know, this has happened before, when the Jews, like when the little Christian gatherings became Christian back in the day, they were still living the Jewish principles and stuff, but it was the Jews that said, no, we need to call you something else. You know, we need to ostracize you from us. And he's saying, you know what? Go ahead. We don't have to, you know, like, don't call us Christian. We believe in Christ. We do all this stuff. And we have another book of scripture, just like the original Christians did. And if you feel the need to separate us from you, more power to you. Knock it out. Kind of an interesting read. You're not going to agree with everything, which you shouldn't. But I mean, it's an interesting take on something that we've been fighting so vehemently, or vehemently, as some might say. Vehemently over the last couple of months, just because, I mean, it's just kind of nice to be like, yeah, you know what? You're right. You guys can call us whatever you want. Do what you do. We're not gonna kill ourselves to be in the in club of Christianity. We're just gonna be us, good Christ following folk.
Yeah, I like what he says here in the basically the penultimate paragraph says, quote, eventually Mormonism will grow up. Maybe a Mormon in the White House will hasten the moment, that moment when Mormonism will no longer plead through billboards and sappy radio ads to be liked.
That was the part that I...
Though I suspect that Mr. Romney is such a typical politician that should he occupy the Oval Office, he'll studiously avoid the appearance of being anything but a WASP. So that's which is kind of true. But.
Yeah, I did not love that part. But
well, I get what, but I get where he's coming from.
Yeah,
I mean, should we have to be in this position where we feel like we are just pandering to everybody? Like, look how Christian we are. Look how normal we are. Look at this.
Yeah, he said,
we know we're normal. I think this guy's more of a put my foot down and be like, you know what, I'm Mormon. There's nothing wrong with that, and I'm proud of it, and I don't need all these hundreds of million dollar media campaigns to try to convince you that I'm a normal member of society. Well,
he quotes Henry Emerson Fosdick. Well, that's a rough name to go through high school with. A liberal Protestant minister who says that he would be ashamed to live in this generation and not be a heretic. Being Christian so often involves such boorish and mean-spirited behavior that I marvel that any Mormon colleagues are so eager to join the fold anyway. Which is true, right? I mean, what are we trying to gain access to, if not like just loving people? I mean, that's all we're trying to say that we do. And Christianity, as of late, has not been the greatest flag bearer.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
well, Christianity, not the Christianity that we
according
know.
To them, Nicene Creed Christianity,
right? Yes,
to which we
anyway.
Do not subscribe.
Good read. I mean, I thought it was fairly,
no, it is good,
fairly interesting.
Speaking of love,
sure. Back to Glenn Beck.
No. It's been a love theme today. This is great. So many of you have probably seen this already. An article that was on the blog, The Weed, written by Josh Weed, but it's called A Club Unicorn, in which I come out of the closet on our 10-year anniversary. So many of you have likely seen this floating around.
Excellent piece.
The social media. It's a long piece, but I really encourage everybody to read it in its entirety to get the full gist of it.
I like that a long piece is like... Oh, two pages.
No, this is a good at least 10 to 15 minute read to get through it probably. So, and in a world today where everything's blog centric and you know you can blast through it in 45 seconds.
So this guy's normally just a humorist.
He's a humorist blogger about, you know, many, many things, and he has a good following, but he decides to come out on his blog and tell everyone that he, Josh Weed, is a homosexual. And first off, you read like, "Oh, great. Another one leaves his wife to go off and be with men." That's what you think this is going.
Do we really need another Ed Perry?
No. And but this is a very fascinating article because he is happily married to his wife. And according to her, she is happily married to him. They have children. Their marriage is great. They have a fulfilling marriage, a robust sex life. And the article goes into explaining all of these various things because obviously the simple question is... he goes to stuff like, you know, what does it mean to you to say you were gay? When did you know you were gay? But then it gets more like, hey, if you're married to a woman, how can you really be gay? I think that's a very fair point. And what I really like, go ahead.
Oh, no, no. Well, I was just going to say, I like this article primarily because it's insightful from someone that, I mean, we all kind of presume to understand and empathize with, right? Like Jeff and I will talk all the time about what it means to be, or like how to reconcile being gay and being Mormon and yada, yada, yada. We have no idea. We don't.
Oh, right. Yeah, right. How could we?
I mean, we can theorize about it, but to have this guy come out and say, this is how I've made it work for me. And, you know, it works really well. And I'm a good practicing Mormon and blah, blah, blah. One of the areas that he touches on where he was having a conversation with a lesbian woman and she says, oh, how does it feel to have a... what did she say? The counterfeit sexuality or something? Because he's married to a woman. So right. How does it feel to have a counterfeit marriage? And he said, oh, I don't know. How does it feel to have a counterfeit family? Right? Because as, you know, as two lesbian women, they can adopt, but it's not the traditional family. And here in his case, he has a traditional family, but not the homosexual marriage.
Yeah.
He's just highlighting the fact that as a gay man, you're going to have to make concessions somewhere. Right. And so do you make it in who you have sex with or, you know, the family that you have access to or, you know, like where do you make your concessions? And for him, this is something that's worked for him. So I thought it was fascinating.
And for her, apparently, that's the interesting thing. I mean, he talks about
he told her on his sixth.
He told her on like on their first date.
Yeah.
Basically, they knew each other as kids. And they both moved. And he moved away. Then her family or something happened.
How crazy would that
place.
Be? Like as a teenager.
And the interesting thing is they became good friends, but then they realized they still had like feelings for each other. And I think the guest post interjected into this by the wife, Lolly, I believe her name is,
uh-huh.
goes into detail, because obviously it's one thing to say the gay guy, but you say, wait a minute, you as a woman in the church, active, all those things,
yep,
knowingly wants to marry a gay man and power through with stuff. And her thought process behind that, I think, is absolutely fascinating. I don't think, you know, I think it is in a sense unique. I mean, not everyone's going to have this. I don't see this is a situation that could work for everybody, obviously. But they talk about things like, you know, for her realizing that, hold on, this is the kind of man I want to be with. It's one thing.
He served a mission. She's like, he served a mission. Worthy.
He puts the Lord first. He wants all those things. And earlier on, the same guy, Josh, makes a point to say, look, as a gay man, I had to make a choice. Either basically, you know, forget my covenants, forget those things in the church and live the gay lifestyle that I might be inclined to, or live the gospel, which he believed in, and he wanted to bring children into the world and have an eternal family. And he believes in those principles. So he said, you know what? I can make it work. It could be awesome.
Well, and for her, I mean, yeah, that shows a lot of gumption on her part to be able to say, no, I love this man. I love everything about him, like top to bottom, and he's got things that we're going to have to work through. But who doesn't, right? I mean, it's either choosing this or choosing, like, whatever the problem. You're not going to find the perfect guy. Everybody's going to have something that you're working through. I mean, whether he hates your in-laws or he's got a pornography problem,
right,
or he's gay. I mean, they're all issues that you know, they're not deal breakers.
Yeah, she makes a good point saying that you know, hey, when we marry someone and love somebody, loving somebody means accepting them for the good and the bad. That doesn't mean that you need to accept somebody that has, you know, crazy faults that would screw your marriage or anything like that. But too often we have this idea that we have to have this idyllic, perfect circumstance in order to properly love somebody. But hey, everyone comes with their stuff.
And for her, she said the hardest thing was sex, right? That was the one thing that was going to be missing from their marriage, and she wanted to have like a fulfilling
sex life. Well, she was concerned about it, but he even says that they do have a fulfilling sex life. You know, he says that it goes beyond the sense of teenage lust. He's like, no, when you're in a place when you genuinely love and respect somebody and have actual... He says it's about actual intimacy with that individual.
Now, rather than being turned on, right?
Right. I mean, I still can't fully get my head around that. I mean, because I would feel like, I'm not a woman, but I would feel like as a woman, you would want to feel like you're also like physically, sexually desired in a sense. I mean, wouldn't you? But if this works for them, then hey, whatever.
Jeff, if I know women, and I think I do.
Women love to feel desired, just as men do. But let me tell you a thing or two about, no.
Anyways,
this is a really, everyone should all read this because look, it's already gotten 1,000 more comments since we last checked.
Well, and it's incredibly honest. That's the thing that you'll get as you read through it. Very honest, very out there, just saying, hey, this is who I am, this is what I'm doing, and this is how it works for us. And that's something that I think is really refreshing. I would hope that there'd be a lot more. Yeah, like we're going to, gays and lesbians are going to feel completely 100%. Forgotten by the church if there aren't more of these kind of stories that come out, because
absolutely
in truth, yeah, they're not forgotten, but they're not necessarily addressed by the church, right? Like the church doesn't necessarily know what to do with them, and so they just kind of ignore the fact that they exist, I think, in a lot of cases. And so having stuff like this where guys are saying, no, hold on, it works, you know, like it's not the end of the, if you realize that you're gay, it doesn't mean that you don't have a future in the church, you don't have the ability to keep your covenants. Like, all that is still possible. And I just think stories like this are really, really helpful in getting that message out there to people that need it a lot, right? Anywho, it's neither here nor there.
Anyways, great article, everybody. Check it out. Can I throw another thing in there? It's a little, yes. I feel maybe a little more less fortunate of dealing with dealing with gay issues in the church and stuff, sure, like that. So good old Jana Reese, who we haven't featured in a while.
I thought we were going to the Mormon Bachelor.
No, we'll get there though. Don't worry. We'll have Mormon Mobatch Corner in a minute. But so Jana Reese, you know, writes Flunking Sainthood, has a pretty entertaining Twitter feed where she reads through the Old Testament.
It used to be entertaining.
Yeah, I actually stopped following her. But yeah, I was just trying to plug for her. Hey, we love you. Come on our show. Yeah. So anyways, did you know... Basically, that the church will put effectively an asterisk on your record for certain things.
Now, do we know that this is true, or is this
just... It's in the General Handbook of Instructions.
It talks about putting a flag.
I'll read through the whole thing, then I'll explain why. It's easy. The thing is, people will look at this and say it's anti-gay, but it doesn't have to do just with that.
Okay,
so on. So it's right here in section 6.13.4, Records with Annotations, pages 70 through 71. In areas authorized by the First Presidency, an annotation may be placed on the record of a member whose conduct has threatened the well-being of other persons or of the church. An annotation helps the bishop protect members and others from such individuals. When a bishop receives an annotated membership record, he follows the instructions in the annotation. Church headquarters will automatically annotate a person's membership record in any of the following situations. The stake president, say this is one, the stake president or bishop submits a report of church disciplinary action, a form showing that the person was disciplined for incest, sexual offense against, or serious physical abuse of a child, plural marriage, an elective transsexual operation, repeated homosexual activities, predatory conduct, or embezzlement of church funds or property. Two, the stake president or bishop submits written notification that the person has been criminally convicted for one of these transgressions. Three,
and on it goes.
The stake president submits joint notification, and so
you can annotate a record if there's repeated homosexual activities by an adult.
Yeah, but you can do it for a lot of other things. Well, also, embezzling.
That feels. That's a weird lumping of things. Child abuse, plural marriage, transvestites, predatory conduct, embezzlement, or being a homosexual. Well, acting out on homosexual activity.
Well, and here's the other thing that Jenna Reese brings up. So what do you think about this, Al? In the paragraphs following, because there was they did a story on Mormon Stories, the Mormon Stories podcast, and there's a So You Think You Can Dance champion, Benji Schwimmer, who's LDS apparently in whatever way that is. But a church leader told him that because of his history of homosexual activity, he had an annotation placed on his record and he could never receive a calling in the church that would have him working with children. I personally am confused by this.
Is this guy active in an active I don't know,
but I think that's irrelevant. The annotation's one thing, but I feel like what is his...
Well, the annotation says if they act out on repeated homosexual activities by adults.
Right.
Not being a homosexual.
No, listen to me. I'm not questioning the annotation in this sense. I'm saying why does that have to do with if he's gay, which is whatever, why does that mean he can't work with children? He's not a child predator. He's gay.
Well, if you're an embezzler, you can't work with children either, right?
That's what I'm saying. Like, what? Well, that makes no sense.
They're just saying these are people that like don't put in trusted positions.
Okay, that's fair.
Right. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily with children. I think it's you know, like callings where you have to have implicit trust there. And Jana Reese is of course going to the point of saying gay equals child molester according to the church, which I don't necessarily
agree with. No,
right? But, I don't think that's an accurate.
But think about that mindset. How often do we actually sit there and say like, oh, someone's gay? That means they're also more inclined to predatory actions against children. And I think that does exist.
For real? You think that people are having that conversation in their head of? This man's a homosexual. He's probably going to touch my kid.
Yes, because we view in many circles, unfortunately, we view gay people as if they are like degenerates or some sort of warped, filthy mentality.
That may be true in California, but not in Missouri. We do not have that.
Well, you shoot the gay people there. That's the main.
That's not true.
That's the primary difference in Missouri. But you know what I mean? It's like, oh, this one perverse thing clearly means it opens up the floodgates to all perversions that are possibly on the table.
Well, and the other thing is it's going to be a lot of it is just going to be based on the bishop, right? If you have a bishop that's understanding and compassionate and like understands what's going on, he's not going to look at somebody that says, I'm gay and say, oh, I got to put an annotation on your record so that you can never serve, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
I mean, because a lot of it is just understanding the situation. So I don't know that it is kind of a disappointment that
food for thought. I mean, I get it if it's like the because it's like the first thing to say is being gay does not mean you get an annotation. It's basically saying that if you're in a position where you could pose a threat to the members or the church, a friend of mine was telling me about the father of a friend of his from his mission who had like left the church
right
at one point in time, and how this guy's like so anti now that he like drags people down with him.
Sure,
and the members in that ward are. Instructed not to associate with that individual. In that case, I wouldn't be surprised if that individual has an annotation on the record. So,
and so this may just be one of those things that just needs to be revisited, right? I mean, I'm sure it was written with the best intentions where they thought it covered their bases and they were going to be fine. But as we continue to understand, you know, people and, you know, the members of the church more and more, this may be something where they can say, well, let's separate that out a little bit. Including the embezzlers. I feel like embezzlers get a bad rap a lot of times.
I mean, really.
They're not bad.
What's wrong with the Ponzi scheme?
People.
What's wrong with the pyramid scheme? This is Utah. MLM is all the way.
Just because he tries to get the kids to guilt their parents into giving him money.
Look, if I get three people to sign up, Jeff, and then they get three people to sign up.
Listen, it's all about your downline. You don't have to do any work if you get a good downline doing all the work for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're selling Cutco knives.
Oh, Colin.
Anyways, I think that's almost it for really serious things.
Let's see. We got a couple more. We have two like kind of Mormon discrimination things.
I love.
The first one is Walmart. That capitalist.
I spent the whole trip telling you countless reasons why I don't like Walmart.
Listen. And
sweet victory for me.
I would have never had a date in high school if it wasn't for hanging out at the Walmart. Waiting while your tires got done.
You're supposed
to
hang out at the gas and sip. Isn't that what you do in
It's the same thing,
in Middle
Jeff.
America?
It really is. But so let's see. There was a guy in wherever. Where was he? I don't know.
It doesn't matter.
This man was lovely, but he was working for Walmart. And I often did this as well, where I'd scream religious discrimination anytime somebody tried to make me work on a Sunday. It works very well, especially if there are other religions represented in the workplace.
Absolutely.
You just say, no, I can't work here on Sunday. My religion prohibits it. It demands that I observe this day. So, I mean, not a bad scenario. And this guy, he was working at Walmart, doing fine, 1995 to 2009, and they respected his demands to not work on Sunday. And so then, as of 2009, they started changing the schedule and said that he had to work on Sunday now. And so he filed a suit against Walmart, and they have agreed to pay $70,000 to this guy.
Boom shakalaka.
Which is more than his salary times 5 years. So that's impressive.
I feel like it should have been 70 times 7.
How much more appropriate would it have been?
Come on. 70,000 for 7 years.
Yeah, that's kind of hard, though, because as Mormons, I mean, you know, you go to the MTC and get a job. They make you work on Sunday.
I know. I think that's the random exception, but I guess it's out of necessity.
Well, but like then if you're a prison guard, I mean, you still have to work on, like, there's some jobs that you take where you know you're going to have to work on Sunday, right?
Yeah.
And so wouldn't working at Walmart be one of those?
A lawyer.
Isn't that a thing?
No.
No.
It's just retail.
Well, you can go in there and say, everybody else has to work on Sunday, but not me.
Well, I feel like if you're in a place that's not heavily like that, it's not a big deal. Like, I found more issues when I was at BYU trying to get jobs for retail for, like, the random Best Buy that was still open on Sunday. Because everybody wants Sunday off. And that creates a problem. That's why you'll find a lot of places like Provo and Orem, they just shut down on Sunday. It's just not even worth it to stay open. They can't get employees who want to work, and nobody wants to shop anyway. But elsewhere, I've never run into serious issues with this, and I've always made a point to say I'm just not available on Sundays. End of story.
What?
And I haven't had much
not the same way, but I have worked jobs, and you always feel guilty when everybody else is working on a Sunday, and you're like,
I don't feel guilty.
No. Dude, I totally do, because if you're on a 6-man team and you're trying to cover shifts and you've been doing it for a year and a half, right? And like somebody always has to work a Sunday, and you're like, I'll work Saturdays, but I want my weekends sometimes too, so not every Saturday, hopefully, please. And then you have somebody like everybody else is just shafted on the Sunday thing. Sure. You feel a little bit guilty, but it's a great move.
Fair enough.
Cry religious discrimination. They can't touch that. HR will freak out. The other one is Inside Higher Ed. There was a decent article written by Thomas Terry, not an LDS man, but moved to Pocatello to teach. And he's just talking about how in many of the higher ed circles, professors and stuff, it's still completely okay to be just bigoted and, you know, biased and make blatantly inappropriate comments about Mormons or a religious group overall. Kind of an interesting read, because you go outside of our little church school bubble, and I think by and large, I mean, most higher ed guys are probably going to have this view of Mormons and not be embarrassed to share it around in their circles, right? Jeff, you've been in higher ed. I am but a poor farmer. I don't understand education at all. Would you expound on your experience?
Well, when I was in grad school.
Go on.
Yeah, nobody cared.
What?
Nobody cared.
No, it's.
I talked to people and I'd say like, "Oh, I was."
Did you ever?
This is what happened. Okay, well, it's different for me because
professors that were like outright like, "Oh yeah, sure, way to go, Mormon."
For me, I really didn't, but I don't know if that stems from. I feel like Americans honestly have a stronger bias against Mormons than like Europeans do. And I went to grad school, you know, abroad, so I don't know. I felt like most of my professors who were aware of that stuff of religion would just be like, well, whatever. I mean, they didn't think much of it. A lot of them, I thought religion in general was silly, so I don't think they tried to single out Mormons.
They were just avid atheists.
Yeah, maybe, but most of them were cool. I mean, I did a whole class on religion and global society, and my professor was well aware that I was LDS and the stuff I was doing, and we had a lot of really good discussions about it. I think the cooler thing I had wasn't professors, but with my classmates, at least because they were European. I mean, I had some girls from Kyrgyzstan, and they found out I was Mormon, and they were like, dude, I used to live in D.C. I love the temple there.
It's awesome. Oh, the Kyrgyz.
Yeah, the Kyrgyz. And so, I don't know. I didn't see it a ton, but this does not surprise me either.
It does.
East Coast snooty intellectuals.
Schmucks. What kills me is, like, people that are supposed to be... You know, that understand the academic process, critical thought,
right?
The you know the rhetoric that goes along with that, the fact that they would come to this conclusion that you know this is completely fine and uh-huh. understood, right? And yeah. just throw it out there like, yeah, no, they're a cult, they're a bunch of schmucks.
No.
It's like, hey guys, hold on,
I'm not.
You do this for a living. You think for a living. Like, think about this.
You think for a
chew living. On this.
So, let's go to Mobatch Corner.
I'm there.
Let's lighten things up now for our last few minutes here. We're already at the 40-minute mark. So first and foremost, really? Yeah, just about.
Good work. Power
through. Wow. So let's go to one of our bachelorettes revealed. Yes, this unfortunate girl, which is this...
Are we doing the Mormon Bachelor thing again?
I don't know.
Because I object.
Is this Courtney Childress?
Childress, I believe. Is
Childress. She's a Childress. Like a
wait,
mistress.
Is this the one that got denied and then...
No. This is just the video. This is the video on local... on Arizona, what does that look like? NBC affiliates.
Oh, my gosh.
Shall we watch this?
All right.
Tell me when you want to hit play.
One,
two, three.
I'm ready to find that EC, eternal companion.
She's ready for that EC.
Start a family and have so many more adventures.
Oh, this was the one with the self-described
Courtney
perfect
Childress
teeth.
Could be the winner of the online show, The Mormon Bachelor. It's similar to the hit reality show, The Bachelor. 13 contestants vying for the heart of one man. And Courtney joins us this morning. Thanks for getting
Wouldn't
up
Wouldn't you hate
early
to
list.
Be the guy
right,
who's doing this
segment? How is the Mormon
segment.
Bachelor
He's like, yeah,
different
so this
from
doesn't matter
the regular show, The Bachelor?
Well, it's not interesting.
Well,
that's
how is this different
LDS
from the Mormon
Bachelor?
Or from
and
the normal
so it's
bachelor.
Probably a little less racy and
there's
less
no
dramatic,
Vienna.
That's for sure.
But you're still a little nervous to get in the mix.
Definitely. Very nervous.
And have your dating
it's
life
nothing
taped.
Less.
Yes.
All right. So we have a picture of the Bachelor. His name is
nope,
Kent
those are her
Tuttle.
Lips.
Let's show Kent Tuttle. Okay. When we get there, he is. He is really not a handsome man, you can see.
Not
the guy
at
looks
all.
Kent
like
Tuttle
a
is
doll.
A fine looking man.
He says he
I would be willing to sacrifice any relationship if she said she wanted
God,
him instead.
A dreamer who wants to change the world and has the ambition and the drive.
Kent Tuttle sounds like a douchebag.
To do it.
I'm just throwing
like,
that
you
out
live
there.
Up to that?
He's going
to
be an
do you
idiot.
Know what? I really think so. I'm looking for some of the similar things too. So I think, you know, when you're looking for a mate, you want to build each other up and to be able to motivate each other.
How'd you get involved with the show?
Do you know what? I'd never heard about it until I was on Facebook randomly one day. Saw Kent
Kent's picture
through a mutual friend Hello. And decided a friend request him. And
she
friended
downhill
from him? There.
Wait, so you knew him before the show?
On
she
Facebook?
Was clearly wearing
Does
a bikini
that
in that wake
Yeah, you booked
pic.
Him. Sure.
Hey, yeah.
Sometimes
I
you gotta
totally
know how to get the man.
Okay, this is a modest
here,
production.
There he is right there.
Yes.
Kent is actually studying.
He's not
to
even
be a dentist,
dentist
so he's
yet.
A dental student.
Well, he's a
yes.
dental
and
student.
You have a
that still has promise.
Set of
how old is he?
Teeth. Like they're white.
He's 27 or something.
Is there
should be a dentist
some kind
already.
Of bond that's going to
be. Is this guy
up
flirting with her?
Way,
you have remarkable teeth?
Hopefully. I mean, I'm not opposed to him
Let's
looking at my mouth.
Let's take a closer look.
I'm not opposed to him looking at my mouth.
All right. All right.
Or inspecting it.
So how
wink,
can
wink.
Viewers follow
like
your
being
story?
On the Love
on
Connection,
TV,
they're like,
right,
so you want
a
date, what are you going to do?
It's
like,
a
well,
broadcast,
just go on
so
the date
they'll be
and then
updating,
what happens?
You know, every
we'll
date
see.
He goes
right,
on, there'll
with
be
this.
A little Again. Episode you could
Courtney
call it
Childress.
On there, and the previous
that
ones
was,
are on
that
there
was terrible.
Well,
now, moving right up here, I got an email the other week from one Brittany Phillips. And when you get these things, this is on Facebook, and I'm like, who the heck is Brittany Phillips? I don't know who this is. So this is from Brittany Phillips, who applied to be one of the bachelorettes and was not chosen. So
a rejected bachelorette.
She's not worthy. And she decided that it'd be fun to hang out with everybody who's been involved in The Bachelor. And this is where I come in, because many of you remember that I was on the original Mormon Bachelorette. And and so somehow she found out that I was a part of this. The funny thing is she said she's emailing people from last season and the one before. And I don't know why she'd bother with me. I'm an old-timey.
Yeah.
But,
third season.
So if anyone wants to go on a fun weekend
no,
cruise.
No, we're not promoting this. Jeff, we are not
if anyone wants to go on a cruise.
Absolutely not. No,
call
don't go
Brittany
there.
Phillips, 503-621-6012.
Go to Travelocity and find a cheap cruise for free.
I just love that the Mobatch people have her on the website saying, our very own bachelorette, Brittany Phillips. She's not your own. You rejected her. She is not part of your
Also, their video link is broken. Just FYI.
For which?
for the little promo video they have.
I don't see a promo video.
It's you have to click the link. Anyway.
I'm not going
to
go there. That's a
everyone gets a second chance. What a stupid... Aaron Elton. You're a terrible person.
Oh, I just love that Brittany contacted me. I should... And now she responded because nobody else did to the thread.
She responded or you did?
She wrote a couple of days later. Any thoughts on the cruise? 2 days later because no one responded to the thread.
And then she wrote again?
Any thoughts? Should I share my thoughts?
No.
Here are my thoughts.
Jeff.
This is dumb. I don't want to go on a cruise with any of you people.
I like cruises. I like cruises.
I do. But not that. Oh, another real quick thing. So Joanna Brooks and some other people were on MSNBC last week. A couple of great segments. They were on the show with Melissa Harris Perry, and they talked all about the
MHP.
You're really into all your like nicknames today.
Yeah, I love them.
So it was actually pretty good. They had a panel with her, Spencer Fullman, who's a professor at BYU. He's the one who wrote this paper about why people fear Mormons, so to speak. It was out a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
Joanna Brooks was there, another guy, some other people. Everyone here basically had some tie to the church. And it's nothing that we haven't talked about before, but I thought it was really great to see it, especially on MSNBC, which has had whack jobs like...
Glenn Beck.
Like Lawrence O'Donnell saying all sorts of things about the church. This was actually a pretty sober conversation about legit stuff. There's two segments in which they appear, talking about the Mormon moment, the obstacles, why this and that. Joanna's, she's in there. I really feel like Spencer Fluman, though.
What a rock star.
He shines.
Out of nowhere.
Yeah.
This guy.
I think we should have him on the show. Watch it. We'll embed the video or something. But it's definitely worth watching. It'll take about, 15 minutes of your day.
President Monson turns 85.
And
we celebrate with a gala.
There's a gala for him?
There's a gala event.
Oh, a gala on Friday the 17th of August at the conference center.
How does this make you feel, Jeff?
I don't know. I love the prophet.
Not good. No.
Though part of
good
me.
Good times. 85. That's great. Good solid.
I'm going to admit here, part of me feels like, okay, we love the prophet, but is this too much?
No.
These are humble, modest men. Do they want some big gala event? Have a funeral for them when they die.
Thomas Monson has always said that he loves the big events. When he was out at the cultural event in Kansas City, he said, I am one of the few, but I love the big shows.
But I am paying tithing.
Oh my gosh.
For a gala event. No. What if I don't want a gala event?
Jeff, it's a potluck.
Is this a waste of taxpayer dollars?
Oh my gosh.
That's what I'm saying.
No, we're getting together.
Is this an inaugural ball?
When was the last time you celebrated anything in the church outside of Pioneer Day? You hapless schmuck.
I have a ward party.
Yeah, a ward party.
It was wild.
I hope that roadshow really knocked it out of the park.
Roadshows!
When was the last time
Instead of this, increase the budget for roadshows.
You're jerked, then.
I would love that.
Eat my shorts, then.
I would love that, but... and a lot of prominent Mormons who shows. Looks like Steve Young will be there. Jane Clayson will show up.
It's a who's who of Mormons.
I hope Mitt Romney comes.
I hope he does.
He won't, because that'll be too close to the election.
So, let's see. Katie Couric interviewed Jabari Parker at the New York Mormon Meeting House.
Oh, and Al has a man crush on Jabari Parker.
Well, so Jabari Parker, if you remember, was the high schooler that made it on Sports Illustrated, blah, blah, blah. Excellent basketball player, planning on serving a mission, still debating. But upstanding kid, Mormon kid, doing his thing from Chicago. Katie Couric had a great interview with him. It's not out yet, but there's a little write-up in the Deseret News talking about it, where they interview his parents and kind of talk about the whole experience. I think it'll be pretty cool. Good for him. Way to go, Jabari.
Other than that, the Manaus Temple was dedicated in Brazil. I think that brings Brazil's temple tally up to 6.
Also, we investigated the Brigham City Temple. Looks very white.
It almost looks fake.
A little too.
Like the pictures I took.
A little too white.
The pictures I took of it make it look like an artist's rendering. Like it does not look like a real
building.
Is it
white or is it too white?
I feel like it's almost too white.
Too white.
Yeah. Because the Rexburg Temple was also white, but somehow it pulled off
brown
realness.
Realness.
Granite silver. Yeah, we checked out many temples while we were driving around.
We sure did.
What was your favorite?
Cardston.
Okay.
On the inside. On the outside.
Kansas City. Or Billings?
No.
Billings.
Billings was a nice temple, but because it was in that filth and muck that we know as Billings.
Yeah.
They
should have just built the temple in like Bozeman, somewhere just a little bit
or
nicer.
Or raise the city. And then
start
just
over.
Leave the temple.
Let the Mormons do it.
We'll fix it for
we'll
you.
Fix everything.
Anyway.
I think that's it.
Heck of a show, Jeff.
Do you have anything else? Oh, silent Darth Vader versus Mormon film?
Nope. We'll save that for later.
Or I can just embed it in the post.
Whatever.
It's
wasn't
a video.
That good.
It wasn't that good. But I'll put it in there.
Let's save it.
For another time?
For never.
Okay.
Or you can embed it. Whatever. Anywho. Okay. Have a great week, man. I love you, Jeff. Thanks for being here. Quit staring at me and twitching like a little mouse. So as always, you can find us thisweekinmormons.com. Email us contact@thisweekinmormons. Find us on Twitter @TheRealTwin.
And on the old Bookface.
I love the Bookface.
/ThisWeekinMormons.
We'll see you there.
Al, we will be parting ways shortly. It's been a good ride, though. Next week, we'll have to do the show like we always used to.
I'm nodding.
Quit staring at me with your beady little eyes.
All right. Have a great week, everybody.
Thanks, Al. Everyone, thank you for tuning in. Hope you'll share This Week in Mormons with everybody else and recognize that we are the best podcast of this variety the world has ever seen.
It's true.
No competitor will ever reach our levels of awesome.
Take that, Mormon.
What we
messages.
Lack in professionalism, we make up for in humor and sincerity.
Or one of the other.
Or one or the above. All right. This has been This Week in Mormons for this week, June 12th or whatever. And we'll talk to you all soon. Bye-bye.
Krispy Kreme 2012. Yeah. We back up in this. Y'all already know. Cause I am the baddest of them all. If you ain't about money, then I don't mess with y'all. Y'all think I don't get girls, cause I ain't very tall. If she see my stacks, I bet you that she calls. You know that I am the baddest of them all. If you ain't about money, then I don't mess with y'all. Y'all think I don't get girls, cause I ain't very tall. If she see my stacks, I bet you that she calls. I had to fight my whole life. I could beat you up even if you had 1,000 knives. Even if you had infinity knives, I would punch you up into the air like a kite. I bet you sleep with the nightlight, cause you're scared of the dark, cause you stink like a fart. Well, I light your fart on fire with my rounds. You think I won't? I do it all the time. I bet I got more money than Jay-Z. Compared to me, Jay-Z is lazy. Plus Beyonce thinks that I'm cute. It's okay, Beyonce, I think you're cute too. I made out with so many girls. I made out with every girl in the world. I might look small, but I'm not. I don't care if you're big, I'll fight you. Well, I do know that I am the baddest of them all. If you ain't about money, then I don't mess with y'all. Y'all think I don't get girls, cause I ain't very tall. If she see my stats, I bet you that she calls. Cause I am the baddest of them all. If you ain't about money, then I don't mess with y'all. Y'all think I don't get girls, cause I ain't very tall. If she see my stats, I bet you that she calls. I have 400 cars. I have 400 scars and 400 guitars. I have 400 houses. I have 400 mouses and 400 houses. Bet you I can dance better than you. I bet you you don't know. 2 + 2, it's 4, it's 4. Now go and shut the door, cause nobody wants to see your face no more. I'm tough as nails, you're slower than a snail. I beat up every single person in jail. I dare you to try and punch me. My face is so hard you'll say, ouch, you crunched me. I fought 2 lions in 1. And I don't even carry a gun. But I never run, but I never run. But I never run, but I never run. You know that I am the baddest of them all. If you ain't about money, then I don't mess with y'all. Y'all think I don't get girls, cause I ain't very tall. If she see my stacks, I bet you that she calls. You know that I am the baddest of them all. If you ain't about money, then I don't mess with y'all. Y'all think I don't get girls, cause I ain't very tall. If she see my stacks, I bet you that she calls. Krispy Kreme, I already told you, back up in this. 2012 to infinity. Get out of here. Peace.